and welcome to episode 178 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me is the creator of the Ace webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the Ayatollah of Rock and Roller, it's Tony Esmond.
What was that book that you were reading earlier? Was it Crime and Bummishment? Was that the name of the book?
Yes, folks. Just before we came on the air, Tony Esmond, writer, and
I want to
state for the fact
titles of books.
Yes, yeah. He's created the word bummishment. Make of that what you will.
A perfectly cromulent word.
Yeah.
What?
That's the Simpsons reference.
Oh, right, okay.
So they're both on form tonight, aren't they, folks?
I must watch The Simpsons. I've seen The Simpsons for fucking years.
I don't think I have.
Anything between sort of series 3 and 10 is gold. After that, I don't even bother.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Is that after the movie, then? Is that when the movie came out?
No, that's way before the movie. Like, the movie, I think it's like in season 17 or something.
What series are they on, then?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's got its 20-something.
Jeez.
Mate, isn't it? Same age as me. First episode was the year I was born.
Funny enough, Tracy Ullman was about when you were born as well, wasn't she?
Yeah. I was on the Tracy Ullman show, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I like Tracy Ullman.
Yeah, her new show's really good as well.
Yeah, that's where that much repeated video comes from, isn't it? That made us chuckle recently that we're not going to talk about.
Yeah.
Yes.
I struggled to record anything she's done. But yeah, that clip is.
Oh, fuck
great.
Off, Jamie. Yeah.
We will have to find that out and put it on the Facebook group for our lovely listeners.
Yeah. And just lose. I reckon we'd lose 150. That's all we'd lose.
That's our audience, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
But yes, as you can tell, folks, it's just us three for the moment. But later on, we are going to have an interview. It's going to be very fascinating for you all. We're going to talk about a process and stuff. So stay tuned for that. But before that, we're just here. We're having fun. We're taking it easy. Talking about comics.
I'm not going to be able to make the interview, am I? I've got to go. So I won't be here for the interview. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, so when you hear the jetpack kick off, that's Tony Esmond disappearing.
Okay. Yeah, are you going to do a special effect?
No, I was just about to say, I just want to say a disclaimer. I'm not going to be doing any extra editing this week.
Me and Tony love the sound effects, but especially me. Yeah, but they don't seem to get...
They don't get enough play.
No.
You put one in under Shelley Bond, didn't you?
Yeah,
you
and no one said a word.
I said something.
I know you noticed it, but no one said a word. Uh-huh. And it just makes me think, what's the point? Do you know what I mean?
I'm still grinning after that episode. Last week's guest was very good as well, but I really liked the Shelley one. She was great, wasn't she? Yeah, really good.
Yeah. It was, and we've only got one more week of guests for 2018, next week. And then it's just going to be the three of us riding all the way into the new year.
We've got our favourites episode. I've already written that, like, my second draft of my favourites.
Yeah.
I'll keep redrafting it. But I've done a second draft at the moment.
I need to look at my list again. I found a fairly concrete list, and then I kept thinking, I haven't mentioned that book, and then I don't. It's difficult. It's difficult to narrow it down to one.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It is. Yeah, there's a ton. Like, I would have to say, I like this one. Also, this one, this one, this one, and this one.
Yeah.
Because there's a ton. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard
to
choose.
I think we might have to say one, and then we can give an honourable mention.
Yeah.
But you can't talk about it a long time, because you know what we like talking about things.
Because this year, for our best of 2018, we've cut down on the amount of topics. We're keeping it short, sharp, and so we can just talk about just concentrate on all the books and stuff. Because you know that we just love to ramble on, don't we?
Yeah, it becomes a bit of a bum fight, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's sort of.
Are you going to try and get the word bum into every sentence?
There was one award show, it might have been the first one, where we spent basically about 20 minutes on the first couple of subjects and then realised that if we keep doing this, we're going to be fucking going till midnight.
Yeah.
So we kind of had to put the foot down at the last couple.
Yeah.
We freestyle whatever we do, don't we? It's not like it's organised in any way.
No. Yeah. Well, we've got a rough structure, but then it just goes off the rails from there.
I like a rough structure.
Bet you do. But yeah, of course, that'll be...
I don't even know what that means. I don't know what that means.
Just read between the lines, people. Just read between the lines. But yeah, our It's our fave of the year. I don't want to be one of those. It's not one of those.
No,
here's the best of, because I don't.
It's an award for you. Come and get an award.
Yeah, it's
your favorite, isn't it?
Yeah, because we can't say what's the best, because all of us and all of you lovely listeners, we've all got different tastes, and we've all
different stuff. Yeah. You can't read everything, can you?
Yeah.
No.
But there's certainly going to be some absolutely amazing books talked about on that episode. So that'll be in a couple of weeks. And we've also got another special show coming up soon.
We need to talk about that one. I've got a plan for that.
Yeah, which we won't announce yet, but we will be asking for a little bit of input from listeners, both in probably email and maybe even audio format.
Oh, I like that. Yeah,
nice.
I like that.
So stay tuned for news about that. But other than that, we're
just like good comics.
Where can I get good comics, Annie?
Me?
Well, anyone.
I went to the Comic Mart today.
Oh, nice.
Comic House.
Oh, yeah. You almost derailed your own segue. We'll get back to that Comic Mart, though. Yes, Comic House, our lovely sponsor. They stick with us through thick and thin for another year. And there's a lot of our listeners that have checked it out, and we're very thankful to everyone who has. But for those of you that haven't, or maybe you're new to the show, hello. Welcome, listeners.
Hello.
It's not always like this, I swear.
It is.
Yeah,
it's
usually like this. It's worse, actually. We've been all right today. I'm quite laid back. Yeah. Been quite laid back today.
Yeah, we're not too bad. Yeah. The meds are kicking in, so that's good. Comic Cows are our sponsor, and they are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. They've got a huge selection of titles on their database, and on their website, loads of people host their books up so people can actually buy hard copies from them, and they only charge like a penny. That's all you get for if you sell a book.
That's pretty low.
Yeah, but you can list your book for free, which is awesome. And also in this world of the digital, which we all love. I mean, we love the printed books, but we also love reading the digital. Comic House have got an amazing app, which is only getting stronger and stronger with every week.
Yeah, we've been knocked off the top.
Oh,
what?
Is it actually a strict top 10? Is it just?
Yeah, well, I think it is.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, but the Comic House app, which is essentially like Netflix for comics.
Yeah.
It's a subscription service for only £3 a month. You get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics. And for instance, what stuff can they get on there at the moment, guys?
The highlight titles, we've got The Comic House Presents Close by Chris Sides, Chris Travell and Ken Reynolds.
Oh, I think I'm going to be reading that. I'm going to be reading that very soon, I think.
We've got a 40-page holiday special for Flash Gordon. Scrimshaw.
That's really interesting, that Flash Gordon. If you look on page 2.
I knew you were going to mention that.
Yeah.
Brilliant, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You have to put some kind of database together of all the comics where you're mentioned in.
That'd be great. Good idea.
Solo Man of the Atom.
Oh, I like that.
That's nice.
And who's done the cover to that one? Have a look at it. Mark Lamming.
Really? Yeah, oh, nice one. And we've got Sherlock Holmes Volume 1, The Trial of Sherlock Holmes by Moore, Repion and Campbell.
Oh, I like them.
Yeah, so that's a good one. The cover looks fantastic on that. I'll be reading all of those comics.
I'm a big Sherlock Holmes fan.
Comic House.
Yeah, I like Sherlock Holmes fan. Yeah, I like Sherlock Holmes comics. But sometimes, do they translate well to comics?
Don't know.
I think that may be a topic for a future show. How do literary characters translate into comics?
Well, Moore did all right with his A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Look, don't ruin the idea for a future show, Dan. Just by
no, okay. So we'll shelve that.
Yeah, we'll have to, won't we?
Yeah, just cut that bit.
No, I'm not going to cut anything. I'm not even going to put funny sound effects in. But so there's all that awesome stuff on Comic House. Like I say, it's only £3 a month, but you can get a 14-day free trial to dive headfirst into the amazing world of small press that we talk about every week. You check out comichouse.com to find out more, and we might have some cheeky offerings for you from them. So
might we? If you pop onto the Awesome Comic group this week, we're going to be putting on a code which gives you an extended subscription to read the app. So you can while away those Christmas days after you've been chomping on turkey by reading Comic Pass.
Or other foods are available, for instance, if you're vegetarian.
Vegetarians. Yeah. If you don't fancy chomping on someone's turkey, the last turkey in the shop, then that's fine.
You could always read issue one of the awesome comic starring Murder Road, Cockney Kung Fu and Viper.
And every time you read that, we get money. We get £100 every time you read it.
Yeah.
Read it, please.
Every panel you read, we get £100. That's how we can
If you tell a friend, we get a million. That's the deal we've done with Pete.
Yeah.
Thanks, Pete.
Because, I mean, that's why more and more people are making comics, because it's that easy to make money.
Yeah.
Jesus. It's like a gold mine.
Yeah.
It's like the new guy. Have you seen that new movie with the thing on X-Files, on Netflix about Buster Scruggs, whatever his name is?
Yeah, Buster Scruggs. Everyone's been
Have you seen it yet?
That's the Coen brothers film, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen that.
No,
there's a bit with Tom Waits where he discovers a load of gold near a river, and that's what the comics industry is like.
Nice. He looks a bit like you in that one as well, doesn't he?
He sings a bit like me as well.
One of them's a professional musician,
and one's a twat.
Going back to what we were talking about just a minute ago, Tony, if I offered, would you chomp my turkey?
Yeah, like, is it vegetarian?
Well, if it's turkey, it's not going to be.
Well, no, if it's a human turkey.
No, because, I'm going to say this, and this is probably going to be quite controversial in this day and age, where essentially someone sneezes and they kick off, something kicks off, right? I personally don't agree when you call something vegetarian turkey, vegetarian chicken, vegetarian whatever, because it's not.
Yeah.
I usually call it pretend turkey or pretend chicken or something like that.
Pre-turkey.
Because it's pretending to be something, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's pretending. Yeah. It's not actually like vegetarian something turkey.
Meat potatoes just doesn't really work.
Yeah, meaty potatoes, I like your meaty potatoes. Yeah.
Oh. You said that
sausage
before.
Carrot. Like, no, it doesn't really work.
I like your carrot sausage. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like,
no.
As well as being slightly sexy. It doesn't sound right, does it?
Yeah. I do like a vegetarian sausage, though.
I bet. they're all right now. When I first became a vegetarian, when I was 16, you can get fuck all. I just used to get a bowl of vegetables. Mm-hmm. But now, like Linda McCartney, God bless her, she saved my life. Do you know what I mean?
Quorn do these little mini Scotch eggs. They're great.
Yeah, they are. Get away with your Scotch eggs. Oh,
they're great.
No.
They're great.
I can't be doing with Scotch eggs just in general.
No. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. But, if you like Scotch eggs, more power to you, but don't...
Movie adaptions and Scotch eggs, they're the two things. You're like, it's like that bloke in Reeves and Mortimer who can't stand Cress. Every time you get him near it, he's
like... Oh, God, I'm fully prepared to see that gif on my timeline many times soon.
And I'll be Wavy Davy. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Oh, dear, sometimes this show feels like Reeves and Mortimer.
Yeah.
But anyway, we've got some... great comics to talk about and a few stuff to shout about in a minute. But before that nonsense, let's cut in an interview that we've done or will do, or let's not think about it because we'll get nosebleeds. Where we had a chat with, I hope I've got this right, Andy Ewington. So let's just
if he turns up.
Well, you know, who knows?
In half an hour.
Who knows? But if you hear the stinger in a minute and then there's an interview, you know he's turned up. I'm sure he will, because everyone wants to talk to us, apart from each other. We don't want to talk to each other. But this interview is going to be cracking. So there you go. Listen to it now. Right then, folks. It's just me and Dan now. Isn't that right, Dan?
Yeah, hello.
Are you excited?
Yes.
Yes, so you should be. Because this week we're joined by a brilliant writer who can be seen in the titles such as Ex Mortis, Red Dog, Overrun, Sunflower, and Freeway Fighter. Not only that, but he does a sweet line of work in the alternate movie poster department, which we'll probably touch on as well. Mm. Yes, it's Mr. Andy Ewington. Hello, sir.
Hello. Good to meet you,
Andy. Yeah.
Thank you for joining us this week.
That's okay. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's getting closer to Christmas, but there's always time for comics. Well,
always.
Actually, it doesn't matter what time of the year. It is, isn't it? Comics are always there.
I always have a trade ready for Christmas Eve, and that's one of the things I do on Christmas Eve.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a little tradition of mine.
Is it like is it just a trade that you've always wanted to read, or just specific?
Yeah, like the trade that's come out like in the past couple of months. It's like, right, I saved that for Christmas Eve.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, very cool.
That's a nice habit.
It makes a difference from other days where I just read comics.
Yeah. I mean, Andy, what do you when it comes to Christmas, do you stay away? You know, do you step further away from comics, or do you just use it as an excuse to get further in?
Generally, what happens is my wife says, "Is there anything that you want to read in the comic sphere?" And I generally go for something very simple that she can find, rather than being so specific that I end up sort of giving her something so obscure that she just gives up and gets me aftershave. So it's usually something like Rick and Morty, or I don't know, something very simple like a collected Judge Dredd or something.
Nice.
I'll just ask for like one of the Vault comics or something, just to give me something that's quite heavy. That says, okay, that's really cool. If I've got a spare 10, 15 minutes, I can just dip in and dip out again.
Yeah, that's always nice, isn't it?
Last Christmas, my parents, bless them, they got me a Last Jedi t-shirt. I don't know my feelings on that film, but that's still sitting in the drawer with a label on it.
Oh, dude.
You know, I've got mixed feelings about it. There are certain parts that I thought, you know, this is really cool.
Yeah.
Certain parts that made me go, you know what, I just didn't get that.
No.
Probably the sort of the layer in space, sort of suddenly waking up and supermaning towards the ship. Yeah. That just was like, I really didn't get that.
No. Yeah.
Just went straight over my head. Even my kids were sort of scratching their head going, what's going on?
Yeah. It takes you out of the story as well, doesn't it? And once you've done that,
Yeah, exactly. If you're starting to question what's going on, you're not paying attention to the story.
Yeah.
Actually, starting to pick holes in it.
I mean, I think for a franchise, this is a rare bit of Star Wars talk on this show. I'm very intrigued. It's made me more interested in Star Wars in a sense, because I want to know how they're going to write the ship, as it were. It's rather than just be, oh, it's just another generic Star Wars film, blah blah blah. Mm. There's definitely, you know, it'd be interesting to see what they're doing, whether they're going to retcon anything that happened in The Last Jedi just to appease the masses.
Because all of us as storytellers, we kind of know how to kind of you deform the story. Yeah. And coming out of The Last Jedi, whoever's got to pick that thread up, there's nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know where you go with that. You kind of have to like almost start again, but you're like, this is episode 9 of 9.
Yeah.
And the last bit has nothing. What are you doing with it? Mm. It's very... I came out of that film like kind of like absolutely puzzled and bewildered.
Yeah. Although that's a good way to start us off, Dan. Like, Andy, obviously, like, you've pretty much been writing comics for almost 10 years now.
Yeah.
Do you find, now that you're a storyteller and you've had more experience doing it, I mean, whether it be, you know, even if you've done just 3 comics, or whether you've had, like, you know, decades worth of comics, you know, as soon as you start that, does it fundamentally change how you see media moving forward, like when you go to the cinema or if you're reading a book or anything like that?
Certainly, being in the craft, I'm looking at it from a different point of view. I'm not just looking at it trying to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'm now starting to understand and look at the storytelling a lot closer, to the point that, not that I'm not enjoying it, but if I see something like that moment where Leia does the old Superman back into the ship, the narrative part of me starts questioning what's going on and why did that happen. At that point, I think if you get pulled out of it, I'm now looking at it quite critically and going, that doesn't work.
Hmm.
But additionally, I'm also, you know, I use films more than I use comics to sort of shape my narrative.
Yeah.
And certainly from using camera angles and looking at the ways that something's been shot. So, yeah, I do find myself, especially in the last 10 years, within the last 10 years, having a more of a sort of a designer's eye, or a film cameraman's eye as to what's going on and how a scene has been shaped.
Mm. Do you find that sometimes it highlights dialogue more for you? I mean, I've certainly seen films or like had moments and just thought, oh, that's, I love yes, lines yeah. like that. That's something yeah. I wish I had written, or I'm going to steal that kind of a line for something going forward.
Yeah, it. I think not so much lines, but sort of the emotion that I'm left with. I'm always looking for that moment where, you know, a bit like when in Leon, when, you know, he's there with Jean Reno has just pretty much died, almost. And, you know, he's there on his back and everything, and he says, this is from Matilda and everything. And, you know, there's emotional points where you're still going, oh, I really want to make that happen, but in a comic form. And you're looking for how you can make that scene, you know, all those little important scenes that you know, tug at the heartstrings, you know, when in Toy Story 3, when the kids, you know, the toys are being left behind and Andy's, you know, having that last play with them and everything. You know, you're always looking for that one moment, the sort of emotion, that emotional connection.
Yeah.
For me, it's not much dialogue, but it's more an emotive connection.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, like, for instance, that Toy Story bit. I mean, when it came out, lots of people were obviously talking about, oh, it's harrowing, that moment where they think they're all going to die, you know. And people were talking about that.
Yeah.
And when I watched it, I thought, well, this isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
No.
But the bit that got me was the moment you said at the very end.
Yeah.
When, you know, you could. I think it also. Ignites sort of memories in your own mind, doesn't it? You know, if you had a fondness for your action figures and stuff like that, you know, I think a lot of people were like, oh, why did I get rid of my toys?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And now they're all melted or on the front of the car.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess you get that as well when you sort of, if you've got kids and you see them playing with their toys and as they grow old, they kind of move through stuff and you feel like, well, they've got that in the pipeline for them at some point, presumably.
Mm. Well, my son's about to move on from Playmobil, and he's got all his Playmobil upstairs and he's got quite a bit, and I'm sitting there going, don't get rid of it, put it in a box or whatever, because, you know, 20 years time, 30 years time, you'll thank me that you didn't get rid of it. Because
I mean, if nothing else, you can shift it for a pretty penny on eBay. to all those people who wish they had never gotten rid of it.
Oh man, don't. I always sort of go back to my mum and sort of drop this one where I was thoroughly spoiled as a child. Being an only child, and the fact that my mum had two ectopic pregnancies, and I was the golden child in the middle. So, you know, I was not given everything I wanted, and I wasn't a brat or anything like that, but she, you know, my mum shows love by buying stuff and giving it to you and seeing the enjoyment that you get from that. So consequently, I had a shed load of Star Wars stuff. I pretty much had everything bar the Death Star, which was made out of card and everything, which I, you know, coveted like anything because my mate had it, and it was like I'd go round and look at this sliding trash compactor and everything. So I had all of this Star Wars stuff, and I remember I left home and my mum said, oh yeah, I sold your Star Wars stuff. And I went, what? Yeah, all your Star Wars stuff, I sold it for £20. My AT-AT, my Millennium Falcon, my Star Destroyer, my Jabba's Palace, all for 20
quid.
I think in the history of this show, that is the saddest story we've ever heard.
Yeah, that's brutal.
it's really brutal. And the fact is, I often tell my mum that that's what she had done. Just not grudge or anything, but just to make a point that she did actually get rid of all the rest.
So can we sit down and watch Toy Story 3 for the entirety? And at the last 15 minutes, I'm just going to turn around and look at you. Because what you did to me, like, for 20 quid.
Oh dear, oh dear. But were you always into comics, like, at that age, though? I mean, how did you get your start into the world of comics, Andy?
It was a sort of a start-stop for me. I remember, and you have to bear in mind that I've got the world's worst memory. I forget everything. I forget names. I'm lucky I can just about remember the kids' birthdays. But I do have little flashes of things. I do remember, I used to spend a lot of time at my nan's house. My mum was, you know, a working mum, and my dad was off doing photographic weddings and working all hours. And basically I was at my nan's a lot, and I do remember that we used to go across the road. I mean, this is sort of like 9, 10, and I used to pick up like 2000 AD and read a lot of 2000 AD. And that was my real sort of, well, even before that, I guess Beano and Dandy were my touch points into the comic. And I then progressed, sort of like got bored of Beano and Dandy, because then, you know, 2000 AD was there, and I said, that looks much cooler. So, you know, that was my early doors sort of entry into comics. And then from that, I kind of drifted away into a lot of Stephen King books, and also reading a lot of fighting fantasy books. You know, I used to collect a lot of that, and sort of reading sort of the Falcon books and the Way of the Tiger and all of those. So I used to collect all and go into Dungeons and Dragons. So comics kind of was there and then dropped off. And then when I got into school, I started to read a bit of sort of Alpha Flight and some of those type of comics from the Marvel, and a little bit of Batman, but I wasn't really religiously into it. I think we played the Marvel's role-playing game. That was more where, you know, we had a little bit more fun being those characters.
Yeah.
Which is quite ironic if you think about it, because what we were doing was pretty much writing adventures, but or narrating adventures to each other with these characters. Which is a sort of a nice sort of precursor to where I ended up. But then obviously as you go through sort of into adulthood, you kind of leave behind, or I did anyway, I left behind a lot of those things, and discovered girls. I had to get a job, and, you know, and all of that sort of took over.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I had Zach, my wife had Zach, I was just there for 5 minutes. Zach was the catalyst for me sort of deciding that I should really try and do something other than play computer games, and that's kind of where I had the inspiration to write 45, which was my first graphic novel, which then sort of kick-started my career into comics.
You went from sort of, you know, it's not like it was a small zines or whatever. So your first thing was a straight up graphic novel. How many pages was it?
It was 90.
See, that's you know, I mean, for me now, and I've only dealt with sort of issues, I've yet to do the first original graphic novel. You must have learnt so much on that first book.
Yeah, you know, some good things, some bad things.
Yeah.
You know, just in terms of understanding contracts, understanding money, understanding sort of how the economy works with it, and sort of, you know, just it was a steep learning curve. And it, to be honest, it wasn't a what I call a comic or a graphic novel in the strictest sense. I mean, there was very little in terms of sequential pages, and it was transcript, a prose with a piece of artwork opposite it. And the artist could then sort of interpret the story within the transcript how they liked. So it was very free reign for those guys, and it wasn't a comic in the strictest sense. And certainly, it opened my eyes to the world. It introduced me to a whole ream of talent out there. You know, I was working with Charlie Adlard, Liam Sharp, Trevor Hairsine, Ben Oliver, Fraser Irving, you know, Dan Brereton, all of these guys off the bat. You know, I didn't even really know who they were. I had no real understanding of the comics scene, which is, you know, probably sacrilege to, if you think about it.
Yeah, but how did that project come to be then? You know, to go from not having written any comics to then just jump in, even though it was slightly different because it was prose with illustrations, as it were. Yeah. How did it all come to be for your first project? I know it's 10 years ago and your memory's like a sieve, But yes, if you do.
And no. Well, I was fortuitous at the time. I was working at a design agency called Annex, and it run by Eddie Dayton and John Sloan. And Eddie also had a comic company called Comex. So,
I remember being hugely excited about Comex when they first arrived as well.
I remember them.
Great stuff. Yeah.
They've done some sort of very, very high end projects. I mean, Rob Williams did Class Wars with them.
Yeah.
And they've done Path as well and Seeds, and and Babel as well with Lee Robson. So they've done some really cool stuff. And it was a sort of, I wouldn't say nepotism, but I had the ear of Comex because I worked there in employment. Mm. So I was pitching ideas to them that, I wanted to write a book, but because I could see that they were involved in the comic industry to a degree, it wasn't full on comic stuff. It was something that was, it's very hard for, an indie publisher to be continuously putting stuff out, a bit like Aftershock. I mean, you need money.
Yeah.
You need to be continually making money in order to fulfill other projects down the line. And, it's very hard for a company to continually make money. And so I guess it got to a point where with those guys that I had to pay for the artwork on 45. And I had been pitching different ideas to them, saying, look, what about this, this, and this? And we just discussed how to do the format and the fact that I wanted to write something, but it was a little bit more a case of, okay, we can't afford comic, the whole thing to be a comic. How about we do something that's a little bit more prose orientated with a little bit of artwork to sort of accompany it? So a sort of a halfway house between the two. And I'd been reading World War Z, which is a transcript story. If you ever read World War Z, first person accounts to a journalist.
Yeah.
So I kind of liked that format as a way forward. So I pitched the idea with Zach on his way being due to be born about a father to be in a superhero world. And you get, rather than a test to determine whether it's going to be a boy or a girl, you have a test to determine whether it's going to be a superhero or not. there's a whole sort of slew of different interviews from birth all the way through to death, sort of trying to find out what to expect for this father to be if their child is born with powers. So I pitched that idea. Comics loved it. And they, because they had been in the industry a while, they put me in touch with lots of different people to sort of ask if they wanted to be involved. And, I funded that, and a lot of people got involved. Some said no. They were too busy on other stuff, but a lot of people, put their heart and soul into it and, helped me out. And that sort of introduced me to the world. And from that, I'm still in communication with all of those guys. And I can sort of, email Charlie and say, hey, how you doing? Or talk to Liam and not feel as if I'm, being out of place talking to them because we've worked. Or feel scared to sort of reach out to them for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I guess there's no sense of like, oh, I'm not a pretender. I'm on the same platform, isn't it? On the same level. Which most of these creators, I mean, I have this. Sometimes when I see a creator at a show, I'm quite, not intimidated, but, I'm quite shy about it. I'm naturally a shy person. So, but as soon as you sort of talk to them, within like a couple of seconds, most of the time, you're just on the same playing field, aren't you? And certainly, as soon as you discover that working directly with them, the walls come down then, don't they? Especially if it's one of those, you don't talk to someone just to see if they're available for work. If you talk to someone like, how you doing, how's your week been, stuff, no one wants to be that person that whenever you open up an email, it's like, oh, he's only emailing me to see if I'm work on a project.
Exactly. I mean, if I was out and, there's been times I've been out and seen Charlie and I've bought him a beer or anything and, we've chatted and just sort of caught up and see how the family's doing and everything. And that's quite nice that, there's always the oh, what are you working on? Anything cool and stuff? And with Charlie, it's always, oh, I'm working on The Walking Dead. Which seems to be the same default answer for him because obviously he's doing so well with that. you know, it's always nice to see what they're doing and catching up with these guys and not having that sort of agenda sort of lined behind. It's always important to network, I think, because sometimes, you know, I found that just chatting to people, they'll suddenly go, oh, what are you working on? Have you tried talking to this person and this person? You know, I heard that they were looking. And sometimes those sort of conversations happen as well, which is quite nice when that does happen.
So how do you go about putting together a project then? Because obviously from that first initial project, you've now had, you know, quite a slew of projects since then. I mean, I remember looking at your Twitter feed, and I think it was around October time when you said it was good to remind yourself just for, like, how much that you've actually done, you know, without actually working for the, like, you know, for the big two or, you know, other publishers and stuff. And I thought that was a brilliant point, because, you know, some people judge success by, you know, how much they're in a comic book resources article or how many books they've done for Marvel and stuff. And that's not how it is. I don't think that in comics, that's not success, is it? I mean, you've done so much and, like, you know, great stuff.
You know. It's really hard because, I mean, the industry is a bit of a weird one, because a lot of people, when they are first, I guess, trying to set out and establish themselves, always sort of think to themselves, right, okay, I'm going to get an Image deal, or I'm going to get picked up by Marvel, or I'm going to get picked up by DC. And actually, you quickly learn that route to those guys, it's very rare that it just happens. And that you have to earn your stripes and graft. For most of us, we have to graft, you know, not up a ladder, because I'm not putting anybody else down, but there seems to be you know, there's different paths to those guys if you want to end up writing for those guys. And there are lots of other people out there that you can write for. That doesn't necessarily mean, you know, not everybody's going to end up writing Batman, and not everybody's going to end up writing Superman. And for most of us, we're never going to be writing that. And you kind of not accept that, but accept it if it happens, and not sort of pin your hopes on just having to write for those guys. So what I tend to do is I have a couple of stages of plans. The first plan is always to have something of my own published somehow. That generally means writing a story up to 60 pages and then networking like mad with the likes of Titan, Dark Horse, chatting to editors, not being so annoying that you end up kind of being blacklisted because they just don't want to deal with you. But, you know, occasionally updating them if you've got something new to share with them or a new bit of news. The other thing is then, you know, if that doesn't happen and you don't end up getting anything from those guys, I then look to try to get a story picked up that is or sent out to my manager out to Hollywood, so that, you know, if I don't end up getting made into a comic, I'll see if I can get it picked up for a film.
Okay.
So generally I write 60-page script. In effect, as a pilot, and if my manager likes it, he may ask me to write a Bible, and then at that point, I've pretty much written a season or have a season planned, and then send that out. And I tell you that those projects, I'll be lucky if I get one in 3 years picked up. So the hit rate for that is really, really low, and you just keep on. You know, it can get really despondent, and you can get really down with the fact that, you know, you're not making inroads. The next thing I tend to do is, again, network with all the editors and ask if they've got any work for hire projects. And, you know, talk to not just editors, but, you know, my comic contacts that I know, artists I know, and say, look, you know, I've seen you're working with, I don't know, Boom. Do you know of anybody in there looking for anything? And sometimes they'll give you a little hint. Try this guy, try that guy. And I did that with Gus Vasquez, who he put me in touch with 451. and said, look, 451, they're new guys. They're asking me to do something. You should reach out to them. And I did reach out to them and said, look, if you've got any work for hire projects coming up, you know, I'll adapt something, you know, because they were taking film scripts from, you know, successful people, stuff like Rob Cohen's Red Dog and stuff, and they were taking the script.
Oh, so that's how that came about. Because you're beating me to the punch in terms of my questions. Because I was going to ask how 451 came to be. Because you've worked with them on quite a few projects, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. So basically, Gus put me in touch, and I said, "Look, you know, I want to write comics." And they said, "Look, what have you got that you've done?" And I showed them 45. I showed them Blue Spear.
I think that's quite important, you know, for a lot of people listening. That, you know, obviously you gave them a shout, but they immediately wanted to see evidence of something that you had done and completed.
Yeah, exactly. It's always a case that they wanted to see something that they could trust, that they could give me something and I'm not going to mess it up.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, you know, be quite diligent with it and quite professional. And I think it's always trying to be professional as possible with your approach. So we talked. They gave me... I think they gave me Ex Mortis to begin with. So I started to adapt that. I had the script. I looked at the script and I basically said, oh, okay. And I worked out a ratio that for every one page of script, I needed 1.5 pages of comic.
Oh, and so
it then sort of, you know, reading through it. And I mean, that's not a hard and fast rule, but it was that's how the maths, having done these quite a few times, that's kind of how I did the maths. And so I was just going, well, there's 120 pages here, and you know, I'm gonna suddenly have an 100, and you know, my maths is useless, but you know, I'm not even gonna attempt to work it out. I'm 180 pages or something, 200 pages comic, and I was like, you know, breaking that down into issues, and it was a learning curve for me, because I think we went to 7 issues on that. And so now, you know, having done that a few times, you know, they'll give me a script and I'll have a look at it and I would cut scenes. I'll look at the pacing. On Red Dog, for argument's sake, Rob gave us the script on that. And, you know, that I saw that there were some scenes that were just going to pad out the issue, and we needed to move it quite quickly.
Yeah.
So certain scenes had to be cut and certain scenes needed to be reworked. And also I had to look at it from a transmedia point of view, because they wanted to look at making perhaps the dogs into toys, and sort of having their own personality. And the way that the dogs had been initially designed, they were all rather similar to one another. You know, they're all big and powerful, and there was no sort of unique voice for each of them. So I said, can I redesign all the dogs? Because I want to have the small one that's yappy and, you know, can go into tunnels. I want the one that's fast. I want the one that's like a bloodhound. I want the powerful one, you know. And so they said, yeah, redesign it. And with Rob's blessing, we reworked the dogs. So they all had their own identity.
Yeah, that's very important, isn't it? It's like as soon as you see them, like especially with dogs, you attach a certain feeling to like the way the animal looks.
Yeah.
As soon as you see it.
Yeah, and it also from a, you know, bear in mind I've done marketing for 30 odd years as well, and sort of put together campaigns. I knew that would work to an audience, because, you know, somebody picking that up going, you know, I want to create the next Transformers off of this range, they now have, you know, all these different dogs that they can create, because they're very, very unique and got their own voice and their own look. So, you know, from a writing point of view, I was not only adapting, but I was taking that story and going, how can this work across transmedia?
You're almost a film editor in the comic book format, aren't you, really? You're looking at it and then cutting out what's needed and, you know, what's not needed, etc.
Absolutely. And that actually is a nice point, because not only, and I set this out quite quickly as well within myself, because of my design background, I understand how to produce something that's print ready. And I can design a comic and I can lay it out and I can do, I could letter if I wanted to letter, but I kind of, I find that my time would be better served doing other things.
Yeah.
So I will employ a letterer. You know, Jim Campbell is my go-to letterer, usually most of the time.
Bit of a legend on the indie scene as well, Jim Campbell.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Jim and I go back quite a while. You know, we've worked together on so many different projects. And Eugene, there's another one, Eugenio, that I work with as well. He was from 451. But in terms of production as well, it's not just about being a writer, but it's being able to take some of the load of the editor off. And an editor's more likely to use you if you turn around to him and say, you know what, just give me the sketches, I'll letter it myself to make sure everything works, and then give you a PDF at the end of it with all the pages set, even to the point of cut. I can swap out pages as they're being altered and adjusted with inks, and then into the colors, so that I can give you a final file if you wanted, that is print ready. And I did that for Titan on Freeway Fighter, rather. I was actually the unofficial editor. When they had their whole sheet down and they had the name of the editor next to the different projects, my name was on the editor list, because I was basically setting the project. And I'll do that for all of them. And I guess that's a nice novelty or a sense of relief to some editors who will go, you know what, I'm so busy putting together X, Y, Z. The fact that I can give this to this writer.
It's the importance of trust, isn't it? It's that, you know, I know he'll get it done if we give him this job, you know. That,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's important for a writer to letter his own stuff as well, or her own stuff, because you can spot areas of mistakes where sometimes you'll write and you'll suddenly see that across two pages, you've got two panels that are very, very similar.
Yeah.
And I'll say to the writer, to the artist rather, I'll say that needs to change, because if you look at them together, that doesn't work. Mm. And sometimes you don't see that because of the wood for the trees. You're writing your script and you're moving on to the next page and you're moving on to the next page.
And you certainly, the learnings of a monologue. Do you know what I mean? We all love to write lots of words on the page, especially if you're working from a cinematic or TV storytelling standpoint. You know, we've all watched stuff where you have this amazing speech. In a comic, that would probably be about five pages if you broke it down to individual beats.
But sometimes the art speaks for itself, and like you think, well, I don't really need the words to communicate what I'm trying to do here. The artist has kind of illustrated that much better than the words have. So you can kind of cut down on dialogue.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you'll sit there and go, I've made a mistake here because I've got the person on the left that should be second. I need to flip this. So I will then put little pink magenta little notes all over the PDF and send that back to the artist and say, this needs, and then put a little explanation in there so that then they get it and see, oh, okay, I can see what's going on. And very quickly, the artist will get a very detailed PDF back as to where all the layout is. And then that obviously goes to the editor as well. So, and I will run point generally on all of that. A bit like a conductor with his orchestra, you know, trying to bring everything together.
Yeah.
As much as an editor is there to do that, I try to do a level of that before it gets to the editor, just so that, you know, in my mind, I have produced as best as I can this story, and I know that it works. Mm.
Is it easier said than done when you're dealing with adaptions? You know, certainly with some things, if they're certain trademarks or they're already books, then there must be, like, you have to run it through several different people. It's not just going to one editor. Have you had those?
I mean, that happened on Vikings, but to be fair to Titan, I had that script passed with very little amends. They read the script and it had to go off, always had to go off to be approved. And unless there may have been a level of buffer or protection between the editor and the stakeholders, which I didn't see or hear about, but between myself and the editor, there didn't appear to be any issues. So, touch wood, I've not seen that happen.
And that I think that's also when the editor steps forward in their job, isn't it? You know, they there's stuff that you don't necessarily need to know about, you know, the backwards and forwards of, like, you know, yep, trademarks and stuff. They just got to make sure that you can carry on and do the best product you can do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm working on Drone Swarm at the moment, and I guess there's been a little bit of back and forth on, you know, ship designs and stuff like that. That is because those Drone Swarm is based on a computer game. So there's a stakeholder there, the game developers. So they're having to sign off on certain looks and characters and stuff. So there has been a bit of backwards and forwards to make sure that those guys are happy. And there's been a little bit of script backwards and forwards on that, but not a huge amount that makes me go, ah. you know, you kind of, again, it, and I guess that's the part where it says you've got to be as professional as possible, because you don't want to be the difficult writer that starts sort of throwing toys out of the prams, because all that does is make you less likely that these guys will work with you again.
Yeah.
So, you kind of got to try to over-service as much as possible, and which is why I take on a lot of the setting and designing. You know, Freeway Fighter, I designed the logo for Ian for the Freeway Fighter. For Vikings, I designed the cover for that, and I also did the cover on Beyonders. But that's because I've got those skill sets.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that suits everybody, because not everybody has that background. But if you've, you know, I guess if you've got that ability, then, you know, it doesn't hurt you to.
Yeah.
And I think
and I think if you do those sort of bits, certainly, you know, me and Dan both have a graphic design sort of background as well. There's a certain, there's a little bit more ownership to it, you know, even if you're just writing it, you feel like, you know, you're doing it as much as you can, really.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of like, I don't know about you. I know certainly there's a lot of artists who will probably agree with me. Sometimes we're a little bit perfectionist. I'm going to say it. You know, if you gave it to someone else and it came back, you might be like, well, that's good, but I would have done that differently.
Not, yeah, especially if you've got a certain picture in your head, like, I want it to turn out like so.
Yeah.
I mean, so you mentioned, go on.
No, you carry on, Dan.
I was going to say, you've done the adaptation of Freeway Fighter, but. You've got one coming up for Death Trap Dungeon, is that correct,
Andy? Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Freeway Fighter wasn't an adaptation.
Well, yeah, I guess it's the prequel, isn't it?
It was a prequel, yeah. So, and again, we're doing the same thing with Death Trap. So for those that aren't aware, Death Trap Dungeon and Freeway Fighter were books that were written by Ian Livingstone. These were Choose Your Own Adventure books from the 80s. Death Trap Dungeon, I think, was released around about 85.
Okay.
Somewhere around about 1985. And they were very much your sort of choose your own adventure. You read a passage and then you get several options and then you go flip to that page and carry on. And so Death Trap Dungeon was that sort of that very iconic dungeon trawl, trying to avoid traps and stuff. And I had the option, actually, when I was putting Freeway Fighter together, I put together the Death Trap Dungeon scripts at the same time, and we had funding to do one or the other. And I just felt that Mad Max being so popular, that Freeway would have been the best choice for them. It's
easier sell, isn't it, really? Especially at the time.
Yeah. So we're now in a position where I'm sort of chomping at the bit to try and get Death Trap Dungeon made into a comic. So I've got a script. I've written issue one. And I've got enough first drafts and second drafts to probably get the whole thing written, but I haven't finished it yet. So I'm in a position of hunting around now for a publisher, or we'll have to kickstart it, because I don't think I'm going to find an angel investor that's going to come out of the blue give $50,000, which is what happened first time. I mean, Freeway Fighter, we were very lucky. We had Matt Mastracci came out of nowhere, totally out of left field, contacted me on Twitter and pretty much said, I'm a big fighting fantasy fan and I want to give you all the money to make this into a comic, which I turned around and I said, are you sure? Because all the money's around about 50,000. And he said, yep. And he did. And he gave us the money and we made it. and we got it published by Titan. But it doesn't look like Titan will fund Death Trap. So we've got to find a way of funding it again.
Okay. Yeah.
So you know, we're asking around. It's more, looking more likely we'll have to kickstart it. Mm. I'm sure Titan will want to publish it if it kickstarted.
Well, you've got a following, and so has Livingston, and there's many people that have got fond memories of those books. I think you'd do all right.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a huge following. I mean, Ian does. I'm nobody in comparison. So I.
Were you a big fan of like the Fighting Fantasy books then? I mean, like I remember the Steve Jackson and the Ian Livingston books always used to, they were a staple sort of.
Yeah, I loved them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they did a lot of their individual stuff, didn't they? But did they start off together and then do separate stuff, or were they?
Yeah, I think they started together because they had a shop, didn't they? Games Workshop. And they porting in back in the day. I think they were working out of a van first time. But they were in. I think they got the Gary Gygax to bring over Dungeons and Dragons and were selling that, and the only retailer in the UK selling it. So they, you know, they made their fortune, I guess, together, and then realized that all these stories that they were buying in, they could probably write themselves in a format that worked. So, you know, they worked together. Warlock of Firetop Mountain is a book they did together. And then Ian did a couple on his own. Steve did a couple on his own. Then they together again.
Yeah, so, they had some amazing covers. I mean, when I was a kid,
those covers were loved them.
Island of the Lizard King. Is that the one? Oh, that's one of the best covers ever. Just of anything. That's so awesome. Like that lizard man hold, like with a panther on a chain.
That's right. And the parasite on crown.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
I always sticks out as the Forest of Doom. There's kind of like a lizard guy walking through the forest, and he's kind of looking at the view, and he's kind of bursting out of the cloak he's wearing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I love that one.
I've seen all the originals, actually, because Ian's got them, and I've been to his house, so they're all framed.
Oh, nice.
So going to Ian's house, I mean, is literally going into your childhood, because he's got like a room dedicated to all of his boxed games, because he did like the Judge Dredd game and stuff like that. So he will have mint condition in its wrapping all of the board games that you used to have, as you know, like Battle Cars and
nice
Red and Blood Bowl, all of those original ones.
Blood Bowl, yes.
Talisman. I mean, I'm big into my board game, so I'm looking at my board game collection over there, and I mean, it's small fry by comparison. But I mean,
board games these days are a completely different world as well, isn't it? They're changed, developed so much. You know, you need a novel sometimes to learn how to play some of these games.
Yeah, there are some. Gloomhaven is massive. One of my friends has got Gloomhaven, which is supposed to be phenomenal. But again, it's like I need the willpower to read those rules.
I always wanted to play the Arkham Horror one, but there's no one to play with.
Yeah. Oh, Dan, I feel the same. You know, but
my best. We used to do a lot of role playing games like Middle Earth. I used to play Middle Earth to death because we absolutely loved the Critical Role tables, which were little descriptions. So rather than just taking hits, if you got a critical, you got to roll on the table and then have this little entry read out about, you know, you turned your opponent's brain into mush. Try a spatula, you know, just to read out on a high critical. Or there's a fumble table where you impale yourself on the groin and you got to read that out. which made it phenomenal. It's a really good gaming experience. But reading the rules, you know, I just couldn't be asked to sit there and read all the rules. So we would make my mate, who was a real sort of booksmith and a big sort of Lord of the Rings fan, we made him read the rules and become the DM. And so he would just be our natural DM all the time. And I don't think he ever actually got to play a game. He just...
Or if he was having fun.
Yeah.
His favourite line was, if we started to misbehave, he would just say, right, you lose all your XP and die. We would just suddenly just really fall very seriously. But I used to love those days. We used to just have pizza till about 4 in the morning. We'd order pizza, play Dungeons and Dragons or, you know, MERP until, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, then fall asleep and then start again. But yeah, I miss those days. I can't do that now, obviously. Yeah.
But did you think you'd ever be walking into Ian Livingstone's house, do you know what I mean, and then seeing his artwork?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, I actually helped him out. And it happened really weirdly. I helped him out on Blood of the Zombies, which was his 30th anniversary book. And so he came to me because we had been... I sent him 45. And weirdly, he was a client of mine because he was the MD or the chief exec at Domark, who had done... who then got bought out by Eidos, who then in turn got bought out by Square Enix. So he was there as a client, and it's like, oh my God, it's Ian Livingstone. And so I sheepishly sort of handed him my, one day handed him my battered copy of Death Trap Dungeon. And, you know, we got chatting and we kept in touch, and I sent him 45. And I said, look, I'd really love to be able to produce a comic of your work. So, you know, I got invited to his house and we just became friends. Mm. And so we've been chatting. He's over in Helsinki at the moment for, I think he's Helsinki for Dragon Meet or Dragon Con or something. And, you know, he was just keeping me up to date because he was meeting a publisher about Death Trap Dungeon, possibly.
Mm. How do those creators feel about like the comic book medium? Because I always see like adaptions happening from like books, novels, you know, Fighting Fantasy or whatever. And sometimes I think, do these sort of original authors really care that much? You know, how involved or passionate do they get about it?
I mean, I've worked with two authors really. I've worked with Ian and I've worked with George Pelicanos. Who has written a lot of American sort of crime novel books, and both came across as absolutely embracing a new medium that, you know, they haven't dabbled in. And Ian was very sort of involved in all of it, really, coming up with, you know, helping me out with names, sort of looking at the artwork and commenting on the look of the car and everything. You know, he embraces anything that is sees a different platform for his work. And George was the same, you know, because it's a new platform and it's their work and it's their babies. You know, they like to be involved. You know, George was less hands-on because obviously I couldn't go to George's house or anything. So we just chatted on Skype here and there and email and, you know, he was very involved in the script, you know, feeding back on anything that I'd written. He's got a good understanding of the military, so and obviously pulling me up on any Britishisms as opposed to Americanisms, that those fatal mistakes have been a little bit too English in my dialogue and stuff. So you know, it was a good, they were very, very involved. And you know, like anything, I wouldn't say that they're doing it because they embrace the comic industry and want to forge ahead in the comic industry, but they embrace the medium and understand that it's opening it up to a new audience. And I guess that excites them.
Awesome. I mean, but how does an adaptation... because obviously you've done some original stuff and you've now working on adapting a lot of stuff, but is there a lot of original ideas in your head that you're thinking one day in the next 5-10 years I'm going to unleash this? Surely there must be.
Yeah, I mean, I've always got original stuff sitting around. I mean, I've got I've got Dead World, which is basically the story of two detectives, one being dead, one being alive, and the dead one is the victims go and see him and he can jump into his body of the partner to solve the cases.
Well, yeah, that sounds like a TV show.
Yeah. Weirdly, it was picked up by Pilar Segan, who were going to turn it into a TV series, the guys that created Haven. And I wrote the script and they absolutely loved the script. And took it off me before it had even sort of, I'd even punted it out to the comic industry. And unfortunately, even though they'd done a few treatments and stuff, they couldn't get it sold. Mm. So That only came back to me a couple of months or a month ago. So I'm now sort of back to square one with that, and trying to take it out and try and find a home for it. And you know, I've got loads of things like that. You know, there's probably a good 12 or 13 IPs that I've written that I just cannot get picked up for whatever reason. You know, it needs money, or it needs somebody that thinks I've got enough weight to make that a success, or feel that they can sell it. You know, I write a lot of genre stuff, so, you know, I'm not going to write something like I Kill Giants, which has got a real sort of deep meaning to it, or anything like that. You know, I enjoy mixing genres. I like crashing into, you know, lots of different sort of areas. But, yeah, for whatever reason, like, it's really hard to get stuff picked up.
I mean, you've still got quite a palette for next year, though, isn't it? I mean, we're saying, like, it's hard to get stuff picked up, but, you know, you've got how many projects? You've got Drone Swarm's one of them. I can see Tooth and Nail. Is that a 2000 AD job?
Yeah, Tooth and Nail is a 2000 AD thriller. So that was originally one of my IPs. I've written a 60-page story. And with thrillers that you pick up, if you get published with 2000 AD, they generally around about 15-16 pages, so I had to massively hack through my story, which, you know, still works really, really well, and hats off to Matt Smith, because I mean, he's done a really good job in helping me shape this. And he's put a lot of faith in my work.
So when you say it's a thriller, is that like a story in three parts? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's pretty much three issues, and each issue is around five or six pages.
Okay.
So, and then what happens is you see how that fares. It's got its own stop end-ish. And if it does well, then I guess Matt or 2000 AD may come back to you and say, okay, well, that's cool, this is doing well, let's carry the story on. And you hope it gets picked up and you create the bigger arc for it. But obviously that was my IP, which I've had to sell to those guys.
That must be a bucket list checked off, though, isn't it, 2000 AD?
Yeah, exactly. To have been reading it as a kid, and then, you know, it's one of the bucket lists for 2000 AD. Obviously the other ones are writing their characters, which I haven't asked for. I think it's very... I don't think you can go in and start going, okay, yes, give me Strontium Dog, or give me... you know, I don't think that's going to happen, and you have to wait your turn and see if Matt, you know, or the editors like you.
I mean, I know nothing about it, but it feels like they're sort of like, you know, you do a couple of things with them, and then they say, oh, do you have any of our characters, you know, are there any of our characters that you want to do a quick, you know?
I guess so. I mean, I've yet to see that happen, but I'm hoping that's what you tend to work towards.
Who would you pick then? Come on, which Toother would you pick?
I definitely Dread. I'm all for Dread. So, you know, not that I don't dislike any of the others. It's just that, you know, Dread was where I was at. When I first got into it, and you know, I have written a Johnny Alpha story for Future Quake, which are the official fanzine. So I've written a Johnny Alpha story in there, Strontium Dog, and I've written a Judge Dredd story in there as well. But I'm really into the Dark Judges. I don't think they'll let me do anything with those guys, but I do like the Dark Judges. I've got a Dice Man as well. Do you remember the Dice Man?
Yeah, I remember that one.
Where you sort of do a choose your own adventure, but in comic form, as Judge Dredd going up against the judges. Which I went on eBay and purposely hunted those down, because it was sort of like, oh yeah, I've got to get those. Yes, I still got to sort of explain to the missus where the money went for that.
We often have talks about quickly like bringing comics into the house when your wife doesn't see them.
Yeah.
Happens to me often.
I've also got the original Falcon books, and do you remember Falcon?
No, I don't remember that one.
It's about a time traveling sort of cop type thing, and Falcon one. There were six books. And Falcon 1, 2, 4 are really easy to pick up. They're like 5, 6 quid or 10 quid or whatever. Yeah. Falcon 5 is about £59. Falcon 6 is about 70, 80 pounds.
Why?
Why? Because they're just out of print. Bloody they're just hell. Impossible to get. But guess who bought them?
I bet Tony's head of these. You
yeah,
might even own
Tony's
them.
Definitely. He's probably got them. Yeah. We'll get them.
You're going to have to check them out. I mean, they're phenomenal books. They're beautifully done. I'm scared to open them in case I dislodge a page. but they're sitting at the top of my, I'm staring yeah. at them lovingly away from the, you know, they're hidden away from the kids so they can't yeah. get to them.
Are they those sort of like old sort of pulpy books that like have that distinctive smell to them?
Yeah exactly. Yeah. In fact, the same smell that's coming from the kitchen.
That's a bit worrying.
It is really, because we've had rats in the house, in the cavity walls. We've had rats.
Oh no.
Yeah, I know. It's like 10 o'clock at night and all of a sudden you hear this sort of scratching in the wall behind you and you can hear it working its way around. And being in a terraced house, we don't know where it's come from, whether it's the neighbours, whether it's us or the next door neighbours down the road. But yeah, we've managed to get this rat catcher. Obviously, put poison down because there's no other way of getting rid of them. Which is unfortunate, but it needs must really, because they'll just chew through everything.
Yeah.
There's a story here somewhere. Come on, that's going to be inspiration for something in the future.
Yeah, exactly. But now there's a horrible smell coming from the kitchen, and we can't work out if one of the rats.
Oh no.
I picked it.
Yeah, it's not good. So yeah, it's one of those days. The missus is like, oh God, it's dead. We've had the floor, we've had the skirting out, we've got torches, we're looking, can't see a thing. There's a pong. And weirdly, our best mates in Plymouth have had the same issue. And unfortunately, it's died in the bedroom.
It's the worst place for anything to die.
Yeah, well, exactly. it's died in the eaves or something above, and they can't get to it, and it's actually just ponged out the bedroom. Apparently the smell is terrible when rats die. So yeah, there's something. We've gone off of comics into...
well basically, as you can tell, folks, Andy needs more money to spend on cheap paperback novels or expensive paperback novels and to get rid of all these rats.
So
where can people find your work then?
eBay. There's plenty of it up on eBay. I get no money from any sales, so it's if Amazon tend to have it, Forbidden Planet have a few. Overrun, which is my indie comic, that's probably available from Forbidden Planet or Jetpack Comics.
Do many conventions?
I'm going to be doing Brighton, I think. I think that's the next one.
Ice Brighton. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Though I haven't got much to sell. See, it's a weird thing being a writer at a convention. Unless you're some uber popular and you've been given lots and lots of comps to sell, sort of sit around going, what do I do?
That's a bit of a sexy noise.
Yeah. It's my cold voice. I've got a cold with deep husk. I tend to find myself sort of just smiling at people rather weirdly and going, yeah, I can maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll design you a poster.
What do you do?
Yeah, exactly. It's really hard for a writer to actually do anything other than, you know, somebody like Matt Garvey, who is like heavy on the indie scenes, just seems to have comics coming out of his ears that he can sell and generate lots of funds. But I'm a little bit different because I'm, you know, I haven't got a lot of stuff that I've produced that I can sell. I kind of did it already with Overrun. I haven't got many copies of that left. So unless I reprinted them, I'm sort of turning up with not a lot.
Yeah.
I might have to print out some posters and sell them or something, but...
Yeah, because you do lovely alternate posters.
Yeah, good. Yeah,
your design.
Yeah, I can't suppose because I don't own the image rights, so I'd probably get told off.
Yeah,
but Yeah.
Oh, well,
yeah.
At least you're thinking about that. Some people just don't give a shit.
Yeah. I know. I'm very sort of conscious of making sure I'm not ripping people off. So I wouldn't feel happy in myself if I was those. And in fact, anybody that asks, you say, are you selling it? And I get asked a lot. I say, nope. I said, I can give you the JPEG. Here's the JPEG. Print it out yourself. And I don't ask for any money. And if they want it and they can print it, then great. And a few people have done it and sent me photos, and that's all I ask. Because somebody down the line might actually hire me to produce one for proper.
Yeah.
And that's how I get my money.
I'm surprised they haven't already, really, because they're really up to scratch.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. You know, it might happen. A computer game publisher has asked me to produce a couple. So I've done those. But, nobody in the film industry has asked me. One of the film publishers said, oh, if you want to produce some of the others for some of our back catalogue, that'll be great. You going to pay me? Nope.
I love sort of like seeing like creative movie posters and stuff. I think, is it Poster Spy or something like that? They do find it out and put it in the show notes. And it's just people doing fan art and fan posters and stuff. And I just love seeing like design takes, because most of the time when we see a movie poster, it's not up to scratch, is it? They just shit out some of these things.
No.
But when you get like a designer who actually cares about it, I mean, one of my favourites of yours, I mean, I could take my pick from the stuff you've done, but the poster you did for It is, you know, give me that as a proper fucking fully blown movie poster. Do you know what I mean? It's just, it's phenomenal stuff, mate. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I came third, actually. I got in the Poster Spy competition for that poster.
It is Poster Spy, isn't it?
It is Poster Spy. Yeah, they ran a competition with the guys, the film guys for It, and they shortlisted mine.
Amazing.
It didn't win, but then I'm going up against artists, and I don't consider myself an artist. I consider myself a designer, which is slightly different. It's like, give me assets and I'll design you something very nice, as opposed to, I shall draw you something very, very nice. I'm in awe of people that can draw, because I used to be able to draw and I can't anymore now. And I just don't have the confidence to draw. But, you know, I can take assets and lay them out nicely to create something very clever.
I think it may be quite interesting in the future, maybe one day, if someone wants a novel sort of comic book cover.
I think that's a great idea,
They could give you some of the artwork.
I had a good... Yeah, exactly. I could quite happily do that. I mean, I did the... Did you see Beyonders number one?
Yes.
Paul Jenkins.
Yeah.
Aftershock. So Beyonders number one, I designed the alternate cover for that. So, and I had some very nice uptake. And in fact, I unofficially won, because you know there's a lot of the comics get flipped by resellers and stuff. But I unofficially won the Wednesday with my variant cover, because I designed a cover that wasn't a comic cover. It was very graphic design inspired. I did that for Aftershock, and I was, you know, very grateful to work with them. You know, wasn't in the capacity that I wanted to work with them, which is as a writer, but they came to me as a designer. I was like, yeah, love to. I'd love to design something for you. So that did really well. And in fact, quite a few people commented on it and picked it up, because it was a cover that was designed very, very well and didn't look like anything else on shelf. And sometimes being different is what it's all about. And, you know, a lot of people said this is, in fact, a designer who was very much into their comics and picking all the covers of the week. She picked my cover and said, you know, this shows you how to design for a very crowded market, something that stands out and is very different. And I'm surprised that not a lot of people use me.
Let's get you being used and abused. That's what we do on this show.
I would mind being used and abused. But yeah, it's quite fun. I quite enjoy doing comic covers.
Nice, yeah.
Well, your work in general is just highly worth checking out. So where can people find you online?
Facebook, but then if you're joined on Facebook, then I've got to know who you are, and I don't want you seeing pictures of my kids. probably more for you than me, because if otherwise you're going to see pictures of kids, you know, their nose looking really sort of weird in you know, dressed up as Abraham Lincoln and stuff.
Well, there's a story there, but we'll do that next time you're on.
Exactly. Twitter, basically. Yeah. Andy Ewington with an I, just to be different.
But you got your Instagram as well, which is
On Instagram, I'm on there as well. So, but yeah, hunt me down on Twitter or
stick it in the show notes.
Yeah,
exactly.
But either way, listeners, there you go. He's given you the go ahead. Andy said you can hunt him down.
Yeah,
exactly.
Thank you very much, Andy. That was ace.
Yeah, cheers, Andy.
Thank you.
How was that for an interview? Hey, what do you think,
Tony?
I
wasn't there.
I know. That's why I'm asking. What do you think?
I bet it's brilliant.
And that's all I need. That's all the.
I'll be listening tomorrow. I like listening to your interviews when I'm not there.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I do. I always like listening to them.
It's hard to tell when you're genuine, Tony.
No, I don't really like. I stopped sort of listening to myself on this anymore now because I feel like a twat.
I've kind of done that now. I know I have to listen through to edit, but I kind of like forward my bits unless I know I've done something horribly wrong.
Yeah.
That said, I listened to an old show during the week from the Comic Smells guy. Guys,
oh yeah, Tom said worth listening to, didn't he? Yeah. And thanks to Tom actually this week. I've got to thank him in a sec. Yeah, go on. Yeah. Sorry, mate.
Cheers for the shout out to Tom's. Yeah, I listened back to a couple of old shows, and it would like I listened to another podcast from another group early in the week, and I was like, fucking hell. And I thought, we're not like that, are we? And I listened back, and we were quite informative, so I was quite happy.
Wow, what happened?
Bloody
to us?
Hell,
yeah. We talked just all process, and I can understand how. I don't want to sound big-headed, but like if you listen to that show, you think, actually, they've got some. You can pick up some ideas there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's good.
And we hope that people do genuinely get something from this show, as well as a load of ridiculous jokes that are only done to amuse ourselves. Let's be honest.
And you, the listener.
Yeah, indeed.
What's that? Where's Dan gone? When professional Dan arrives, it puts me off a little bit.
Usually before
we come on air, we're talking about boobs and stuff like that, and just trying to insert the word bum into sentences, and then he goes all professional, and it's like I feel a little glow of pride.
It's taken me nearly 3 years to get it.
Yeah, true. But you know, we just wanted to shout out to you, Dan. Oh, and while we're here, we might as well do some shout outs.
I just did one there. So over to you guys.
I've got one, two.
Go on.
Do you know what? That was a really smooth segue, and it's just gone completely to pop.
Up. Yeah.
That's
half of the course.
Take it away, Tony.
I'd like to thank Tom as well again for the Comic Smell and everyone who has helped with how to make comics with Springworth, which is, as we speak, should be just about finished, and we've almost, as it stands at the moment, I think we've almost doubled our amount, which is pretty cool. Yeah, thanks everyone. We're over the moon, and we're really pleased with it. And there's a few little exciting moments that we've yet to sort of declare along the way. But I'm very proud of what Andy and Aaron have done with the book, and it's really nice.
Is there any message you want to give to anyone who pledged the campaign?
And I just thanks. If you didn't pledge, you're dead to me, obviously. That's, and I've seen the list, so I know you are. Do you know what I mean? But other than that, no. But seriously, anyone who's sort of retweeted it or, you know, even just messaged me saying, how's it going and stuff like that. It's been really nice. Really nice experience, actually. Not quite the stressful experience I expected, but probably because we made our money in the first couple of days. So it sort of it didn't really sort of yank at my balls all that time. Do you know what I mean? So
we'll have to talk to you about like the Kickstarter experience on that one, because essentially it kind of dropped out of nowhere, wasn't it? It wasn't a lot of kind of hype beforehand,
not really,
and then it was like bang, here we go, and like you said, you've doubled your target.
Aaron Rackley from Little Heroes and Fair Spark is pretty efficient, actually. He gives it out, he's a bit of a lively gangster, but he's actually a pretty efficient guy, and he has it, and he's always saying, what about this, what about this, and you know, there's all these little things that happen that it was in his hands, really. We just did a lot of promoting, and everyone on the Facebook page was very supportive, and the listeners were very supportive, so that's pretty cool. So if you want to do a Kickstarter and you want to make sure it's going to get its money, do a podcast for 3 years and you'll be fine.
That's not the way you live your life.
The other one I wanted to say is I went to the Comic Mart, and I only briefly ducked in, so I did the rich man's the rich man's option of paying a fiver and going in at 11. And as I sort of wandered around, there was, as we mentioned earlier, a man in a vest. Now, he wasn't like a bloke in a running vest or a cool guy in a vest. You know, he was an old, hairy-backed man in the sort of vest that your dad would wear underneath a shirt, wandering around. And I thought, who is that freak? And then I realised he was running one of the stalls. So it was kind of the usual crowd, to be fair.
Yeah.
But as I walked out, standing there, like literally waiting for the next 5 minutes so she could get in free with Sarah Harris, and in the car park, I bumped into John Bishop. So it was nice to see them, but I didn't really get to stay about. I had to leg it home sort of reasonably quickly. So it was nice to see them. I had a quick chat with them both, so it was nice. But picked up a fucking pile of stuff. I'm going out to see Mr. McCune and hopefully meeting the Mighty Mauro in a couple of weeks. So I've got a few gems for the both of them. So that's quite exciting.
Nice.
There you go.
So my couple of shout-outs this week. First, for the forthcoming weekend is going to be an amazing weekend for comics, no matter where you are. Well, hopefully if you're in the local area for these two.
If you live in Boston, it might not be as great.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, but we will miss you. And you'll be there in spirit. But on December the 8th in Bath, Comedia, is the BAM Comic Art and Zine Fair from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Free entry.
Yes.
And yes, it's been put on by the likes of Rachel Lee Carter, Lise Richardson, Sam Schaefer, Andrew Richmond, Rebecca Bagley, and myself.
Hey.
So yeah, we put together a little impromptu little event with the fine folks of Comedia, who are really helping out a lot.
And is that the same place as like the comedy gig venue?
Yeah,
type place?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's a chain of them, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
A really nice one in Bath, actually. And it is pretty central to town, centre of town, and also the Bath Christmas markets are on at the same time. So hopefully there'll be a nice, you know, we'll get people walking off the street and just buying comics and art.
You're going to be wearing a Santa hat, Vince?
I might do.
Yeah, that'd be great.
The problem with me is my head's too big. Hats don't fit me normally. But you never know.
You never know.
But we've also got some other people there as well, the likes of Paul Ashley Brown, Vault 29 Comics, John Tucker's going to be there, Evie Bash, the students from Bath University, and even though he's got a problem with his throat at the moment, Tony Esmond's actually going to turn up for the day as well, and he's going to be there.
I've got a table.
Yeah. Why do you say that? I've got a table.
You're going to be bringing along some Hilda.
Well, hopefully, I'm just waiting for Sam to say it's all right. But I'm hopefully going to bring some along. If anyone, I've got a couple of the Hilda dolls left. So if anyone wants, what better time for a Hilda doll than Christmas?
Exactly.
So, give me a shout if you want one. I'm sure I can sort you out.
Christmas has come early to Bath.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
Bath.
Yeah. But
Bath.
If you're planning. Bath. If you're planning to come for the day, the Christmas markets are a pretty busy time in town. They're quite a big deal in Bath, so just plan accordingly in terms of like just getting in traffic and parking and stuff. I'm not saying it's like Mad Max Fury Road, but you know, that's why having a respite of comics, somewhere you can go to look at some amazing artwork. It's not just comics as well, there's zines and people are doing sketch cards and all, you know. Andy Richmond's done some amazing sketch cards that you'll be able to get.
Oh, I saw them. Yeah, they look great.
Yeah. So, and he's got some exciting projects for the new year. Well, everyone does, actually. So
he followed me this week on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, apologies, Andy.
Yeah, we have to say an apology to everyone, don't we? Yes, so you can find the BAM Comic Art and Zine Fair on Facebook. We'll probably also tweet about it close to the time. Follow those creators. And if you're in the Catford area on December the 9th, then there's the Catford Comic and Zine Fair, which is in Blythe Hill Tavern. That's 12 till 5. Postcode is SE23 1JB. That is also free entry. And you've got the likes of Douglas Noble, Joe Stone, Lucy Sullivan, Centrala, Broken Frontier,
nice.
Our pal Gareth Hopkins. Yeah, gets a shout out for the second week in a row.
I love Gareth Brooks as well.
They're all going to be there. This weekend, there's going to be so many people trying to shift some comics to you. So don't miss it. You can find it at CCZF2018 on Twitter. So, two fantastic events.
Can I make a request?
Go on.
Yeah.
Can we have Rachel from your Bath event? Can we have her on the show at some point? Because I like her work, and I've got a feeling she comes across as quite normal, but there's a dark, there's some darkness.
There is, but I think you might intimidate her too much, Tony.
Why?
Because you scare the shit out of me.
I might be staying at your house on Saturday, so start worrying now.
Yeah, I know.
I've a top tip for Catford is leave before it gets dark. Trust me.
Yeah, don't get a night bus. Yeah. There's a little tip for you.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's two completely opposite ends of the spectrum right there. And
there's me sleeping with no clothes on because I have to stay naked, and I do sleepwalk around Vince's house, which is obviously a nice thing. Or there's Catford at night, which isn't.
Yeah. Either way, it's going to be a sexy weekend. Yeah. And one final shout out before we get onto the recommendations. I saw this earlier today. I just want to give a shout out. Andy Clift said this on Twitter. So I just want to give a shout out to his good wife, Rachel, because his tweet said, "Rachel made the most amazing Sunday roast today. It was out of this world. The cauliflower cheese in particular was outstanding." So
That's going the extra mile doing cauliflower cheese.
Cauliflower cheese. Yeah. And if you do that right, it's just amazing, isn't it? So
You're a big fan of cheese, aren't you? From your cheese rolling down the hill days. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's why I'm so pretty.
What?
From the rolling cheese down hills. What the hell?
Yeah, he can't beat roast dinners, man. They're the king of the dinners.
Oh, yeah.
They are. I'd put them in curries. I'd probably put them ahead of curry. Yeah. Like a really hot curry when you're drunk. I'd put a roast dinner ahead of that, as a pleasure.
Are you one of those people that likes really like hot curries then? I'm not a heat person myself.
Yeah, because I'm not a 12-year-old girl. So that's the reason I like really hot curries.
Bit of an exclusive on this week's show. I've been outed as being a 12-year-old girl.
Why has no one kind of done an East-West fusion and done like a Yorkshire pudding filled with curry? I mean, that shit sells itself.
Fuck off, Dan.
It's got to be somewhere in it.
Perhaps if we could open up like an eatery in style near Hoxton,
I reckon Greg's could sell that. They'd sell out.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think Michael Caine said it best. Some people just want to watch the world burn.
So
that is.
And if you put too much spice in the curry, it won't be just the world burning.
I've seen Backdraft. I know what happens.
Don't wear suede shoes. That's what it says as well. Because you get piss on them when you're at the urinal. That's a genuine thing he said. So I thought that was quite cool.
Yeah, he's a very wise man.
Full of sage wisdom, yeah.
Yeah.
He's from the Elephant and Castle, isn't he? That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
I used to work at the Elephant and Castle, so that's good.
Speaking of cool...
That's pretty rough as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty shit. Yeah.
Speaking of things that aren't shit, it's time for the recommendations this week.
Nicely done. Thanks. We're running a bit behind, aren't we?
Yeah, we've got about a minute each to do recommendations.
The guest has been messaged, so you don't have to worry.
We're going to be a tiny bit late. Yeah. Is it what he said? I'm off home.
Yeah. He said, I've decided never to talk to you people again. Okay. Pretty much like every guest.
That's why we don't have many returning guests, and those that do come back on twice are usually a bit weird.
Yeah. There's a lot of people going, oh. Yeah.
But weird in a nice way, like us.
Yeah. But anyway, what would you like to recommend first? Tony, do you want to go first?
Shall I go first?
Go for it.
To be fair with you, and this goes along with a message that Dan just sent me that I won't reveal. I've become a little bit disillusioned with some Marvel books recently. There's some good stuff there still, but some of them I'm like, not really. So I've fallen back into DC. I keep hearing great things. Like for example, Tom King's Batman series. I heard that's brilliant. So I thought I'll read that. It is very good. It is, however, the most decompressed book you are ever likely to read, but it is good. So I thought I need to find something that I just want to read some good sort of straightforward, no complications, adventure book, really, I suppose. And I wanted something that wasn't going to be tied up in DC continuity because I haven't read many DC books for about a year. So I read 11 issues and one annual of this in about the last week and a half. I met the creator of it, the writer, who is these little clues coming up, Robert Venditti, who was just an early NYCC that I went to because he just released the comic of Surrogates. You remember that movie, The Surrogates?
Yeah, I've got that
mid-tier
graphic.
Brute. Yeah, I think Robert Venditti wrote it, and I met him the sale of it before the movie came out, and I sort of followed him a bit since then. And he's so I'm reading a couple of his books, one of which is Hawkman, and the other one, which is the book I want to talk about today, which is a book called Damage, which is also a sort of 90s character called Damage. Do you remember that character?
Yeah, I do remember that character.
Yeah. wasn't very particularly noteworthy, but this is a complete sort of I don't even know if it's a reboot. I just think that maybe they're using the same name. But so Robert Venditti mostly writes it. He credits quite rightly too, credits a lot of the artists as being part of the writing process, which is pretty cool, I think, all these times. So some of them are Kerry Nord, Tony Daniel, and Diogenes Neves. Now, they're all, whilst there's been, I think, 12 issues, if you include the annual, there's been quite a few artists. There's probably been five or six artists on it so far. But I think they've done is they've kept the style very consistent, and they've chosen artists with a sort of nice adventure, clean line, Byrne, Neil Adams-esque sort of style, you know, esque in big sort of marks, you know, very, very sort of clean adventure style art. And it's consistent enough not to break your concentration when you change issues, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
It's a real sort of exciting ride of a book, and it's probably not a great deal more than that, a little bit more of that, and I'll mention that in a minute. But it's basically DC's Hulk book. It takes you back to the Hulk that we used to read, you know, of him travelling across the country, fighting people as he travelled across, and, you know, getting into scrapes and meeting other characters, you know, from the universe, and then meeting monsters and, you know, rubbing up against people from the local community and stuff like this. But whilst in many ways the Hulk was a sort of Jekyll and Hyde story for the 60s and the 70s, I suppose it was a Jekyll and Hyde for the sort of atomic age, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that was the sort of, you know, a lot of Stan, God bless him, a lot of his characters were metaphors for other things. You know, we had the X-Men were racism, and Peter Parker was teenage angst, and, you know, all this sort of thing. And the Hulk was a metaphor for the problems of the nuclear age and what we're walking into, the problem of technology and how it's, you know, and the sort of nature against technology thing as well. But in the for this one, for Damage, he's notably very different. He looks a bit like a techno version of Darkseid or something like that, a sort of monstrous version of him in a way. Or Doomsday, maybe. In fact, there's a couple of little jokes in one of the early issues. Someone says, that's Doomsday. And says, no, that's not Doomsday. It's like that sort of thing. So it's a sort of, he's kind of a techno Hulk in an age of soldiers in our world who work alongside technology, which is a big deal, isn't it? Every time you see a sort of soldier in the field in the news, he's always wearing a visor, and, you know, yeah, he's got a walkie-talkie, or at least a sort of Google Glass thing if you read sort of sci-fi novels. You know, it's that sort of thing going on. But it's a sort of a Hulk for the sort of technological soldier but also it has that sort of underlying thing about PTSD in it, where he is a soldier himself and he can't remember stuff, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But so that at first, when you start reading it, the consciousness of the bestial side of the character, so it's a soldier who transforms, so like in the same way that Bruce Banner can transform into the Hulk, this guy transforms into this beast, and it's at first off it's sort of separate. And you think, oh, and he has no control. But as you begin to, as the issues go on, it's not a little bit of a spoiler, but as the issues carry on, he begins to, they each be able to sort of communicate with each other in a sort of firestorm. You know, the way firestorm sort of communicates between the two sort of personalities in the one body, you know, there's that sort of communicative thing going on. So his sort of mission, or his raison d'etre, is to survive, firstly, take revenge on the creators, and right the wrongs that he's done on people. The character's name's Ethan, and as he's sort of slowly realizing what horrible things he's done, where the two personalities merge, he begins to realize that he needs to right things. You know, he needs to make things right against people, and the whole of the world is against him. At one point in the early issues, he fights the Suicide Squad. That's a great issue, actually, really good issue. He even fights a sort of smallish version of the Justice League in one issue. He has the Unknown Soldier appears. That's a great character, you know. The Unknown Soldier appears at one point. And Swamp Thing sort of is kind of in his corner at one point. but one of my favourite things is you can read this without getting tied up with the next event, you know, the next crisis event or where it's going to be. And you can just read through, and it makes a great, like, book just to read, if you wanted just a comic to read every month, you can read this. There's a couple of extra twists in it which make it interesting. So he can only change for an hour, so he can only become this beast for an hour, which I know is kind of been done to death, but I think to a certain extent it does add to the tension. You know, he's fighting Green Lantern, he's trying to get away, and you see the clock ticking at the corner of the page, and you know in 35 seconds he's going to change back into the weak soldier and pass out, you know. And he's also keen to discover the secret labs and the secret bases, and he discovers the sort of creatures and experiments who are a bit like him as the issues go on. So he sort of discovered the failed experiments. He is incredibly strong. I mean, he sort of stands on his, he stands his own against Flash. There's a sort of mini Justice League you take him on in, I think, issue 11. And it's the Flash, Guy Gardner, Green Lantern, Vixen and Green Arrow. And he beats them all. Do you know what I mean? And issue 11 ends up with Superman, like, literally landing in front of him. And you think, oh, this is going to be good. It's really good, actually. I would suggest you also, if you're going to read anything by Venditti, you read Hawkman as well, which I've now dived into, and that's a really good series. DC does, I mean, this is what these two companies do so well, it's just sort of straight up adventure stories. It doesn't matter what, you know, where you're from or what you're into, but adventure stories are great to watch. You know, we all watch Mission Impossible and all this sort of thing, don't we? And it's just it's just great to sort of turn off for a bit and read a book like this. And I have to say, I really enjoyed it, and highly recommended. And I think if you manage to see a cheap trade turn up on Comixology or in the shops or something, grab the first six issues and see what you think. Good, clean style. Really nice.
Yeah. That looks great. There you go. Looking there. It looks great.
Yeah, really good. Yeah. Nice. I would say people who maybe liked Marvel UK stuff as well would probably quite like it. It's sort of Lee and Sharp, cagey style art and stuff like that. You know, good. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
That's my one, guys.
Nice. What you got? Well, I'll go next. This one I read a couple of weeks ago that I was a big fan of. Found on Comixology. For an absolute song. It's called Phantasmagoria, issue one, by Amigo Comics, which sounds like an old. I swear there was another company.
They did Planet of the Demons. Demons.
Of course they did.
Kevin Gunn.
Yeah. That's a good series as well.
That's a good, great series. Yeah.
Well, Phantasmagoria is written by El Torres, art by Angel Hernandez, and the lettering is. It says in the credits that it's monkeys with typewriters. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. So, but it's, which made me laugh. But I'm guessing that is part of the same creative team. They've lettered it themselves. What this is basically, it's almost like a supernatural kind of Sherlock Holmes type story. Sets up a mass murder involving a haunting. There's a cult of gentlemen, intruders from the outer void, and possessed dolls. You know, as you do. I know Tony's a fan of possessed dolls.
I do like movies with possessed dolls.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah. this is all centered around the mysterious Professor Hawk, and who has a magician he keeps in the madhouse of Bedlam. So it automatically has that kind of like Holmes and Moriarty, but in a lot darker sort of fashion.
It always sounds like a Full Moon movie, and I'm already in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the way it starts off with a woman on the run as the bells of London are chiming, and she's just...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and she's screaming, please somebody help me, you know. She comes across some people who find her, and then the shadowy
sounds
figure...
Sounds like a bus out of Catford.
Yeah, yeah. There it is again. The shadowy figure that... kind of looks a little bit like Jack the Ripper comes out of the smoke, and you think that that's the villain, but in actual fact the woman is possessed and the person that appears out of the shadows is Professor Hawk. So, you know, that was a nice twist. I mean, I went into this book not knowing anything because the cover just looked quite cool and quite sort of like retro. It had almost like this slightly 70s Suspiria kind of vibe to it, but in a Victorian kind of way. It's a nice cover. And but what I didn't expect was, you know, just a cool sort of like supernatural occult Sherlock Holmes type story, which, yes, there's been lots of that done over in comics, hasn't there? Let's be honest. You know, we've got great stuff in the small press, like the Merrick the Elephant Man and the likes. And and if you're a fan of that, you'll be a fan of this, I think. I mean, I don't know where these guys are from. But I think it's definitely one to check out. I mean, I got it digitally. I don't think it's one that you can get on the shelves. I don't know how easy the Amigo comics are to get hold of. Planet of the Demons was fairly readily available.
Yeah. I reckon it's on Comixology. So I think they all are, I think.
Yeah. But this was only like for us over here in the UK, this was only 69p.
Oh, that's right.
So, yeah.
That's steal.
Yeah. And it's a good sort of, I don't know, 26-page story. You know, front to back, and it's got a little bit of a cliffhanger where, you know, there's, I mean, demons sort of like sort of when they exit bodies, they're like a screaming ectoplasmic skeleton that just pour out of people's mouths. Nice. It's gruesome. It's a cult. A lot of it is all set up and in the dialogue, as naturally these stories are, aren't they? You know, it's definitely in the way that the characters are developed, and when he goes to Bedlam, yeah, and you see these crazy sort of inmates there, and there's definitely a mystery that plays out. There's a little hint to stories that came before, where Hawk and his arch enemy, you know, that on that ship, the Terror, which they made a TV series of.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think so. You know, there's a nod to they were on that ship and things went down. So there's nice historical sort of moments.
Let me ask you this question: what is Bedlam now in London? What is the building?
I'm either going to say a nightclub or a bakery.
That's the War Museum.
Would have been funnier if it was a bakery. Because then you could just sort of say you'll go mad for our bread.
You can get all sorts. You can get cakes. You can get bagels. You can get bums. You can get all sorts of things.
You can get sectioned. Yeah, but yeah, definitely. I mean, issue one has come out. I mean, Amigo are fairly regular with their releases, aren't they?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I know sometimes when you see the indie comics, I've discovered many a brilliant indie comic on Comixology and then waited to see when the next issue is out. And I'm guilty of that myself. But I think it won't be long till issue two now. So get in on the ground floor with Phantasmagoria number one. So there you go, there's mine. And Dan, I know you've been looking forward to talking about this one, so take it away, sir.
Yeah, I've read it all, I have to say. I've read about...
It is quite a dense read, isn't it, that one?
Well, I've read about a third of it, and then I was like, I want this in a hard copy, so I've ordered it.
There's quite a nice hardback of it, actually, you can get.
Yeah, I've kind of ordered it on Prime yesterday, and there's like a ton of back matter stuff in it. And
Oh, nice.
It's weird, because the cover... It's Butcher Baker, The Righteous Maker by Joe Casey and Mike Huddleston. And the cover, when you first sent it to me on 10, I was like, what's this? I was expecting some kind of like indie comic, but it was going to be a bit touchy feely.
But right. It's not that, is it?
Polar opposite of that.
I'm so glad you like that, mate. I've sent it to you, V, as well, haven't I? But yeah. So if there was ever a comic that I think was probably made for Dan, that's the one.
Right. It's just an absolute, like, it's really hard to describe it, but essentially he was like the top boy, the daddy of superheroes, and he's sort of like all these kind of jobs is behind him, and he's been several years like out of the game, and a job comes up and two government officials and the president go to see
him. That's right. Yeah,
and basically he's just like got a harem of women that he's just banging.
Just tiring out. Yeah.
I can't really put it any other way, because it's very offensive, the comic. And he sort of finishes and he says, "Oh, you ladies got 10 minutes before I'm sort of ready again. So have a rest."
Christ, I only need to take about a month.
Yeah. But essentially, they put him onto a job and then off he goes. And the style and it's just absolutely madcap. It's fantastic. So over the top, and kind of the art style flips from kind of being quite sketchy and kind of berserk. And
who
then
does the art again? Is it Huddleston?
Yeah. Oh, he's a beast.
I love Huddleston's work. Absolutely love it.
But just like there's a bit where he's kind of like having a bit of a road battle. He's got this huge kind of truck with like stars and stripes and the eagles on it. It's fantastic. And he gets into a bit of a ruckus with a sheriff that sort of reminds me of... Smokey from Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah,
amazing.
And just the way the kind of like the movements implied with like the light trails coming off of the lights, and it just seems really energetic and furious. It's fantastic.
I bought this out as a monthly, and I fucking absolutely adored it. And the Mighty Matt Harrow is a huge fan of this book as well. And I'd kind of forgotten about it, and then I saw it was on sale, and I thought, right, you two are getting a copy of this. Because had you read it before, V, or have you not read it yet? Or
I'd seen an issue or two. And I know there was quite a, you know, I mean, I'm a big fan of Huddleston's work anyway. So
And Joe Casey is completely suited, isn't he? Do you know what I mean?
It's Huddleston with the seatbelt off, isn't it? It's just amazing.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? Yeah,
I would say, do not read this if you're easily offended.
Yeah.
Because you will be offended.
Let's face it, you'd have turned off by now.
Yeah, you wouldn't be with us for this long.
We know our audience.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah.
degenerates, criminals.
And we love every single one of you.
Yeah.
And we hope you get out
very
soon.
True. Yeah.
Especially you, the person listening now.
Yeah, just
oh,
you.
God, look at him. He's breaking the fourth wall.
He is. It's like, it's like the Deadpool of podcasts.
Yeah.
Oh, oh Lord.
Don't be a hipster, Tony. Come on.
Sorry.
No, but that's definitely one to put on your list, folks, if you haven't, if that,
yeah,
that flew by you when it, when it came out originally.
I mean, it's about 4 or 5 years ago now, I think it came out.
Yeah, I think it's about 4 years.
Yeah, I reckon, yeah, maybe that long. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, amazing stuff. And we hope you enjoyed this episode, which was full of amazing comic talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. So,
and a great guest who I haven't heard yet.
Yeah, yeah, which Tony's looking forward to listen to. God, we're professional, aren't we? If you don't think we are, then you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
Not everyone at once, though, to be fair.
No, no.
Crash
no.
the server.
Yeah, well, you know, Google's only got so much power. Yeah, you can email us if you want us to talk about any events coming up. I know we'd like to find out more about more sort of small events that are happening all over the country or in other countries. So if you've got anything coming happening in your neck of the woods, get in touch with us. Follow us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod, where we will be announcing guests and probably will be getting a little bit more active on there on the lead up to Christmas, because you know.
Yeah. You know. Oh, I've taken part in the art challenge. I am.
Yeah.
That's
oh, what?
Great.
You mean the art challenge that's taking place on our Facebook group?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Murray has sent out the names now, hasn't he? So you should all have the person you are drawing for. I've had a little look behind the scenes of somebody's, and it looks fucking amazing.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'm doing the booby prize, so I get to choose someone, pick a name out of a hat, and they get a drawing, well, a drawing round something of mine.
Oh, my word. Nice. If you want to know what he's talking about, then go on to Facebook and join the group Awesome Comics Talk, because that's full of exactly what it says on the tin. We don't mess around here. It's just full of good people talking about comics or just comic events or just everything in general. You know,
yeah, I think so.
It's a brilliant group. I love it. And if you also do the Book of Faces, then go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast and like us there. There you go. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review, just generally shout the word to anyone that will listen, that we're here and we want your love. I mean, some more than that. But anyway, yeah, and thank you for listening to us. Whether you heard us on Spotify or like any sort of networks like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
There's only one, baby, and it's Pod Bam.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, keeping it clean like that.
Yeah, but Barth, B-A-R-T-H.
Yeah, you're going to have a culture shock, aren't you, in a week? Anyway... Where can you find us on Twitter and online, etc., Tony?
Ezohyz. Me shouting a lot on Twitter. I'm going to be shouting a bit more soon, actually. I'm decided I'm going to be a bit more shouty, so come and see, watch the fireworks, or never on anything.blogspot.co.uk. There's an Europe Books review that I talked about a couple of weeks ago, East West, which I put some images and a little review online. So go and have a look at that and buy it when it comes out. It's fucking astounding.
Nice. Where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Yes, nice. So smooth.
He's like, Lurpak.
Slip in.
Yeah. Pardon?
and you Lurpak can Lurpak in Last Tango in Paris, and anyone who knows that, what that means,
oh,
you're a Roman.
Dear. Yeah, and you're showing your age. You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmouseandmars.com. Thank you so much for listening, as always, folks. From Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of awesome comics. Catch us here next week. Same time, same channel. Well, we don't have a channel, we're just here. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.